Welcome to Epilogue, the only show that cuts into the big issues behind the best books on politics and world affairs. I'm Derek Conway, and this week we're reviewing Gaza in Crisis, Reflections on Israel's War Against the Palestinians, by Noam Chomsky and Ilan Pappe. Before we get right into the discussion and introduce my guests, let's take a look at this brief introductory video.
Noam Chomsky and the prominent Israeli historian Ilan Pappe got together to put an important account of contemporary imperialism with the book Gaza in Crisis, Reflections on Israel's War Against the Palestinians. The book starts with Chomsky highlighting possible outcomes of the Palestine situation, the use of boycott and divestment, and, as always, the important role that the US plays in supporting Israel. It examines Israel's Operation Cast Lead and attempts to place it in the context of the Israel-Palestine conflict as a whole. It describes the basics, the US support for Israel, the possible solutions to the conflict, one state, two states, binational state. Pappe adds vital historical background, including a chapter on the deep American evangelical roots in the support of Zionism and the birth of modern Arab nationalism in Palestine. Chomsky, on the other hand, doesn't believe in an academic boycott of Israel. The authors are not always in sync on every point, but the fundamentals of the crisis, plus the scale in humanitarian, moral, and political terms, are clear. Today in Epilogue, the review of the book Gaza in Crisis, Reflections on Israel's War Against the Palestinians, by Noam Chomsky and Ilan Pappe.
Distinguished American professor Noam Chomsky is a prolific author who's earned international status for the breadth of his analysis of foreign policy and key social issues. In this book, he combines with Professor Ilan Pappe of Essex University to present an eye-opening and succinct series of essays on the treatment of Palestinian civilians in Gaza by Israel. To examine the work of Chomsky and Pappe, I'm joined in the Press TV studios by Sarah Colburn, director of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and by Majdi Akhil of Manchester's Interpal, the charity for helping Palestinians in need. Welcome to you both, and thanks for joining us. Now, it's not exactly light reading, and I suppose many of the issues would be known to you, but what did you make of the book? Did you find it informative?
I thought it was very interesting, yeah. And I thought, for me, some of the most interesting material was the historic material around 2006-2007, because we tend to forget, although we remember the major issues, the Operation Cast Lead, the run-up to Operation Cast Lead, we forget the build-up to it, we forget the fact, and you do, because the Israeli media have so much of a free rein, you forget about facts like, for example, that were brought out that the same day as Shalit was taken, there were two Palestinians who were kidnapped, civilians kidnapped from Gaza and dragged into Israel, and which was a far greater crime under international law. Mm-hmm. And those sort of details you forget in your daily life. And yeah. So I think those were very important for me.
Yeah. Well, Majdi, what do you make of it?
I think this is a very nice book, and it is very important for everyone interested in politics of the Middle East. He must read it, because all the media now focusing on what's happening now, but the roots of the problem. This book went and clarified the roots of the problem, that the what called Israel now, it is just a few asylum seekers came to Palestine and they became the citizens, and they kicked out the original people, the population of 700,000 people at that time, 1948. Mm. And this book focused on, as Sarah said, about what's happening now. They upside down the facts about, as an example, the kidnapping or capturing Gilad Shalit. Every single day, the Israelis capture many Palestinians. Yeah. This operation, this process not stopped. They capturing the fishermen of Gaza regularly. They arrest many people from their houses without a trial, without courts. So it is, there is no balance to look at the issue from, everyone should look to the issue from both sides, not from the Israeli point of view.
I suppose in some ways, because there's so much focus about what's happening in North Africa and because of the focus of what's been happening in Syria and the Yemen, that to some extent the news media is sort of not really following much what's happening in Palestine. I mean, you experienced this yourself, Sarah, when the peace convoy was going on, in terms of how the media report things. And it's actually quite difficult to get a balanced sense of reporting out of all this, isn't it?
It is, and that's why I think... there are stories in this book that really are not... They're not widespread. The story about why the fishermen can't fish further than 3 miles outside Gaza. And it links very clearly the decision to reduce the space they have for fishing to the discovery of the oil field and Israel's need to control those natural resources. Sure. And so there are stories behind the immediate headlines. What the part of the problem is that we get immediate headlines generally about, a few rockets coming from Gaza. What we don't get, as we get in this book, is, for example, in that period of time between Israel supposedly withdrawing from Gaza in September and then the taking of Gilad Shalit, there were 7,700 rockets that have been fired from Israel into Gaza. And we often don't get the entire story. And so I think that's the reason why it is very useful and very important for you to read between the lines and read behind the history. Even people who are very sympathetic to the Palestinians, you do need to understand what's going on.
It's getting the facts out, Madge, is part of the problem, isn't it? I remember the first time I visited Palestine, an Israeli official was saying to me, look, the Palestinian farmers don't look after their land. They don't, care for it properly. That's why we have to do something. What they didn't explain, of course, is that the water was diverted. And what can you do with land if somebody's diverting water away from your crops? So, people don't get the full picture of what's really happening to try and suppress the population. Do you think anything could be done to try and broaden that a little?
It is big lies about these issues with what's happening about agriculture and fishing in Gaza or in West Bank. It is because of the Israelis' atrocities. Can you imagine that we have thousands of acres near the borders between Gaza and occupied Palestine? No farmer can go to it. Or if he go, he is under danger. And we lost many people. They were killed, innocent farmers. And about the water, they are pumping the fresh water from around Gaza, and now 92% of Gaza water is salted or polluted because we are suffering and we have no freedom to get to our natural resources. As an example, a few years ago, they discovered that the coast of Gaza, there is in the Mediterranean Sea, 95 billion cubic meter of natural gas. It is for no one can use it. And no one, that from the British Petroleum Company, BG, British Gas, they discovered it, and we have no access to this big wealth. And about people in West Bank, checkpoints, 460 checkpoints, which make the transportation is very difficult. The crops, it is difficult to send it from city to city. So everything is harassment against the Palestinians. And then they say the Palestinians doesn't take care.
I mean, in some ways, because I think it's one of the things that these two professors highlight in the book, it's not just about the economic pressures, which we've discussed and which are unknown, but it's almost an attitude as well. I mean, that phrase, exterminate the brutes, which sort of jumps out of this book. This attitude that the Arabs in that part of the world are a lesser race. They're not humans. And you'd think the Israelis of any race on the earth that shouldn't have that attitude. It's horrifying when you see it expressed by very intelligent people. These are not morons that are using phrases like that. One's a professor at Harvard. I mean,
absolutely. And this is becoming increasingly openly said, as we know, with the drift even further to the right in Israeli society. But this is not something that is limited, in a sense, to the experience of Israel. This is something that happened during all previous occupations, the way that Britain always occupied countries to do it because the population were incapable of governing themselves. That's always the argument that's used. And I think what has been very interesting, in a sense, the book can't cover it because the book was published before the events of the Arab Spring. But I think what's very important and encouraging now is the way that lie is being completely exposed because the populations of the region are rising up and declaring they want to have their right to determine their own society and their own futures. And this is all impacting into the Palestinian struggle as well.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, at the time of the Balfour Declaration, it was conveniently forgotten that during the Ottoman rule,
yeah.
Palestinians had always administered themselves within the Ottoman Empire, whereas some people try to portray this as a nation incapable of self-governance. What experience have they got of it? Well, that's not the historical fact, whatever you may make of how efficient it was or effective it was. It was historically the case that under the Ottoman rule, Palestinians were self-governing. But that doesn't come across unless more and more people highlight it, I suppose.
Not only that, if you talk about the past, yes, you are true. And now, Gaza is the highest level of education in the world.
Yeah.
Gaza is 1.7 million people now. The 94% are educated. Yeah. You can't imagine how many people got PhD and master degrees in Gaza only. We are very highly educated people. We can. You know, Beit Lahia is a small village. It took the first prize of strawberry cultivation. It is the number one in the world, quantity and the quality. So we have a lot of things can we do if we are not under siege. But Gaza now is the biggest prison in the world. Not only that, if you go to about what Sarah mentioned, that the people in Palestine, they deserve freedom more than any other country around them because we are struggling under occupation. Mm-hmm. And for this reason, the siege against Gaza, it is illegal completely. That means a lot of suppress and harassment against the people. What is the future? It is very dark because the international community against the Palestinians, they support Israelis up to now, especially United States of America, and I would like to remind about what mentioned in the media that the Arabs are ignorant. After 1967, it is mentioned by Chomsky that Moshe Dayan said, let the Palestinians live like dogs, if they like or they can leave. This is the mentality of the Israelis for the Palestinians. We are not dogs, we are human, we like the peace, but on the basis of justice.
I think that's a very good point, Matthew, just to take a little break and look at an extract from a book, because I think you'll find this extract says it all about how an intelligent individual, someone who's an American professor, very pro-Israeli, views the situation. And it's slightly scary that someone so well-educated would look on the issue in this light. Let's see what he has to say from the book.
I put aside the real fanatics, like Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, who declares that Israel never kills civilians, only terrorists, so that the definition of terrorist is killed by Israel, and Israel should aim for a kill ratio of 1,000 to 0, which means exterminate the brutes completely. It is of no small significance that advocates of these views are regarded with respect in enlightened circles in the United States, indeed the West. One can imagine the reaction if such comments were made about Jews.
I mean, I know that's a highlight of the phrase of one individual, but I suspect it's reflected in the views of many who are particularly pro-Israel. And you find it slightly scary that this attitude decries international law completely about the effect on civilians. I mean, is somebody holding a gun? Okay, it's a target. Mm-hmm. But the vast areas of children and women and residential areas that have been attacked by Israeli forces, and yet, according to that extract, with entire justification. It's quite scary.
It is scary, but I think also what is important to read in the book is the justification by various Israeli military generals and politicians of the targeting of civilians. And it's openly explicitly said in the book that this is because you terrorise the civilian population into submission. That is the way that Israel believes it should handle the conflict, rather than abiding by international law, ending the occupation, giving the refugees the right to return, and those sort of issues. And so that is basically the targeting and the killing of civilians is made clear in this book is not an accidental issue. It's a deliberate strategy. But I think that the future doesn't need to be as bleak as Majdi has you know, is concerned, because I think what's happening is, although the situation on the ground in Palestine is horrific, what's happening is there is far more awareness and far more activity to support the Palestinian cause. And I think that's what, combined with the smoothness, steadfastness of the Palestinians themselves, that's what gives me hope for the future.
Do you think, Majdi, that attitudes are changing in the West particularly? I mean, do you think Israel has always had sort of victim status, if you like, you know, lonely little Israel, yes, amongst a sea of Arab hostility, and all that they've always pushed and relied on to keep America and Britain and France firmly behind them. But do you think that's starting to change a bit now? I mean, during my political lifetime, I've seen a change in attitude and people more willing to question what Israel's doing. Do you think that's now happening more in America as well as it is here in Britain?
I don't know what's happening in America, but I always see what's happening in the UK. There is a change.
Yeah.
It is slowly, yes, but it's growing up, especially after the lead cast operation against Gaza. A lot of British people, they started to ask what's the situation. But before going on this point, I would like to go back to the point that all the Arabs are terrorists or the Palestinians are terrorists. This is the mentality of the new generation in Israel. And when during attacking Gaza, January 2009, and two rabbis came to the soldiers, to the borders of Gaza, and it is mentioned in this book, and they told them there is no innocent in Gaza. That means kill without limits. Mm. Kill anyone. Anyone in Gaza means he's a terrorist. And this mentality should be changed. No. And about the change of the mentality of the West, I think that the future is bright. It's good. Yeah. People started to see what's happening, especially after the communication revolution, after internet and Facebook, Twitter. Now even the students in the universities, they started to discuss the issue of the Palestinian Zionist issue. And we see that more supporters to the Palestinians now, when we start or when any movement start any event, more people attend these events supporting the Palestinians.
But Sarah, do you think in this book the two professors don't always agree?
No.
What's your view about their idea on the academic boycott?
Well, I mean, we are very clearly in support of the Palestinian call for boycott, divestment and sanctions. That includes academic boycott. And I think that the tide is very clearly turning in favour of boycott. One of the issues that Chomsky raised in his book is he believes there isn't the support for it. But I think given what we have seen in terms of support for boycott of Israeli goods, campaigns against complicit firms that are cooperating with Israel's crimes, such as Veolia or a Grexco or a Harvard, we're seeing mass support for those campaigns now. And yeah, so I think, I'm hoping that Chomsky will, you know, revise his view of that. But I do think it's a bit like in the situation of apartheid South Africa. One of the key issues for apartheid South Africa they took particular pride in was their sporting prowess. With Israel, one of the key issues that they take particular pride in is their academic prowess. And so for them, the academic boycott is a very key issue that they are campaigning against. And I think it is obviously working when the Knesset are passing laws that ban Israelis from supporting a boycott. I mean, that is a bizarre attack on freedom of speech, yeah, and that must indicate that it is having some effect.
Yeah. What's your take on this, Manji? Do you think a boycott would actually improve awareness, or would it just help Israel say, look, we're the victims still?
I mean, I agree what Sarah said. It is very, very effective weapon. It makes number one, it will raise the awareness of the normal people in the West to start to ask what's going on.
Yeah.
Number two, that when you start this boycott, the Israeli academic, they will start to think or rethink what's going on, and maybe they change their views. But the main thing, economic boycott is more strong than academic boycott. This is very good, but we ask people to boycott the Israeli products, which is strengthen the Israeli economy.
Yeah.
But this is not, I don't think that it will stop Israel from atrocities, but it is like a stick.
Yeah.
But the main thing that the policy of the Western countries, they must change, and they must go back to the rights of the Palestinian people, rights of freedom, rights of going back to their homeland.
Yeah.
But I think those are both interconnected. And I think that's the point, yes, that Ilan Pappe makes at the end, is that the movement for justice and for freedom for Palestinians is massively increasing worldwide. But the problem is that our governments do not reflect those views, and therefore the issue of what civil society can do by carrying out messages, clear methods such as boycotting Israeli goods, are very, very important. And that's the reason why the movement has grown so much, because it's something that everybody can do, and it's something that everybody can act together to make a change.
I mean, I know President Obama's obviously been fixated because of the financial problems the Americans have had, and you could see why his focus would be there. But I think many hope that he would be a sort of fresh view on this, because there hasn't been a lot of progress since President Clinton, really. And I think perhaps people are a bit disappointed he hasn't been that focused on what's happening in Israel and Palestine. Do you think that's going to change?
But even the economic crisis in America, but still, the pipe of dollars is not stopped. It is pushing billions and billions to Israel. From 1948, as Chomsky and Ilan Pappe said in this book, that more than $100 billion sent to Israel.
Yeah.
And this is from the pockets of the taxpayers, American taxpayers. And without the support, financial support of America, Israel will find itself in big dilemma.
Yeah.
But we asked President Obama and the American people to rethink about the rights of the people, make balance. Mm-hmm. We are not against the Jews, never. We are against the aggressive people who came to kill the others. We can live in peace, we can find a solution if there is intention. But there is no intention with Israelis.
Yeah, I mean, Obama's been quite sort of strong in his views on the settlements, but there's no action, and the UN can't really do anything because America will keep blocking everything. So the UN is fairly toothless when it comes to the plight of people in Gaza and Palestine generally.
Yes, it is. But I think also that there is a discussion and debate happening, not just in the US, but in Britain, about whether it is in the US government's or the British government's strategic interest to tie themselves so closely to Israel. And so, for example, you've had a number of reports from British government sources, from the Foreign Affairs Committee and other bodies that really are questioning why Britain is not prepared to act in accordance with international law. And so I do think that the more pressure that we can put on civil society to change government's policies, the more fertile ground we've got. And that's the reason why actually approaching each individual MP, we have a great advantage here, which is we do have constituencies where we can elect or deselect our MP.
Yeah.
And bringing that, the good issue on of Palestine is a key issue, can make a big difference.
Thanks for that, Sarah. I think it's a good point to add, because I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. I've read and reviewed many of Chomsky's books, and though I do not always share his opinions or conclusions, the depth of his analysis is always remarkable. Teaming up with Professor Ilan Pappe resulted in an exchange of opinions which more than merit consideration. I'd like to thank Sarah and Majdi for joining us, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have a book you'd like the programme to review, we'd like you to keep getting in touch, and here's how.
The Epilogue team want you to continue with your book review suggestions. You can email us at epilogue@presstv.co.uk. And don't forget to join our Facebook page. Enter Epilogue on Press TV into the search bar. You can watch past episodes, leave comments, and take part in discussions with other Epilogue fans.
Keep your feedback coming, and until the next Epilogue, thanks for watching.